Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
2020 has been a year like no other.
It's going to be special. I'm going to talk about it forever, baby.
This football season is certain to follow that lead.
Might have been reading a press clipping that they're so good because they didn't show up today.
Questions like never before surround every team, both on the field and off it.
I'm not really sure what's going on down there and why they made this move.
Will Mahomes barbecue the record books?
On third down and 15, and Mahomes guns it for 44 yards.
Can Brady recapture the jewels for a gang of Pirates?
The clock's ticking on everybody.
Will Trevor Lawrence make the Tigers the kings of the jungle?
Lawrence going to go and look long, wanting Ross. Ross makes a one-inning grab.
Every week, the answers are right here, right now. It's Sunday Morning Football with your host, D.A., on CBS Sports Radio.
And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. Thanks so much for being with us. Damon Amendolara with you each and every week as we recap what happened in college football and preview an NFL Sunday coming up this morning on the show in 40 minutes. One of the best players in Seattle Seahawks franchise history. He was an elite college football star at Penn State. He's a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. A three-time Pro Bowler, running back Kurt Warner is going to join us coming up here on the show in 40 minutes as the Seahawks are off to a flying 5-0 start. We'll preview Rodgers and Brady and the big game of the weekend. What will it look like when tonight rolls around and we have the Bucks versus the Packers? Also, we'll have the odds from Vegas. We'll look at today's NFL action with our Vegas virtuoso, Larry Hartstein. Next hour on the show as well. And in 20 minutes, it's Excessive Celebration, your best play-by-play calls of yesterday's college football action. If you want to jump in, get involved in the show, hit me up. I know you got thoughts on yesterday's college football, today's NFL on Twitter, DA on CBS. And on the phones, it's toll-free, 855-212-4CBS. So glad you're with us. So much to get into this morning on the show. Last night was the big one. Nick Saban on the sidelines last night for the Alabama Crimson Tide. He had had a positive test earlier in the week, which appeared to speak to him not being able to be on the sidelines as his number two ranked Alabama Crimson Tide would take on the Georgia Bulldogs, ranked number three in the country. The Bulldogs have now perennially been the thorn in Alabama's side, more so than any other program in recent vintage in the SEC. LSU had beaten Bama last year on the Cinderella run of Joe Burrow and ended up winning the national championship. But year in, year out, we are seeing Kirby Smart, a former Nick Saban assistant coach, build a program that is able to hang with Bama. They got all the way to a national championship game and held a lead in that. They got to an SEC title game and held a lead in that late as well. But both of those games went in favor of the Tide. And last night in Tuscaloosa, the same old script continued to unfold for Bama versus Georgia, Saban versus Kirby Smart, and Nick Saban versus any of his former assistant coaches. It is where we begin your Sunday Gunslinger.
In football's Wild West, He shoots from the hip.
We need men like him to make towns safe for decent people.
DA is the Sunday Gunslinger.
When you have to shoot, shoot. Don't talk.
All right, let's do it.
Now, in this game, Saban had come into the contest 21-0 as a head coach against a former assistant coach who is also a head coach. So when one of Saban's former assistants, one of his proteges, was on the opposite sideline as a head coach, Nick Saban had never lost. Never. 21-0. And that speaks to this dominance Saban has over his assistants, but also this incredible coaching tree that he has. But last night, the Bulldogs, behind walk-on Stetson Bennett, had a lead at halftime. And one of the eye-opening series of the game was right before the half. Georgia was knocking on the door, and Bennett had not one, not two, but three different plays where he had open receivers in the end zone. This spoke to last week when Ole Miss and Lane Kiffin were able to stack up yards and points against Alabama. Now, we all know that Saban's been a defensive mastermind for a long time, and Saban and the Alabama Crimson Tide had won multiple national championships with the strength of their defense. But here it was that after last week getting gouged by Ole Miss in a win, and this week going into halftime, it seemed like Bennett and Georgia could really move the football at will, especially after some short fields and turnovers, and guys were just running free in the end zone. If Bennett was better, boy, could Georgia have had a bigger lead. But in the second half, it wasn't necessarily that Alabama's defense was that much better. It was that Alabama's explosive offense put its pedal to the metal. And play after play and chunk yard after chunk yard led to easy, big-time Alabama touchdowns. And when the dust settled, he had done it again. Nick Saban, 22, assistant coaches, zero. Here's how it sounded.
Mack gives the signal. Devontae goes in motion behind him. Mack looks right. Pressure's coming. He'll throw long. Waddle's got it behind the defense. Leaves the DB on the ground. There you go. You ask, you get. 90 yards. Tyson Campbell wondering what happened to Jaylen Waddle as he left him behind for the touchdown.
Is there things we got to work on? Absolutely. Is there things we got better at in this game? Absolutely. We just played a really good football team, right? And we didn't play our best game, and we turned it over three times. We got to get better. I realize that, and that's on me, and that's my responsibility, and that's what we're going to do going forward.
That was Eli Gold, Learfield, IMG College, Kirby Smart. Sounds a lot like Nick Saban, huh? Saban's genius is that he's been able to win with both types of football. Smash mouth defense, run the football, win 20-17, and also the type of football that we saw yesterday where when they had to turn on the Jets, they were absolutely able to do it. And now Alabama has turned into wide receiver U. It's amazing. Mac Jones was phenomenal in the second half. Wide open receivers. And the talent that comes through Alabama these days, the wideout position, just continues to blow your hair back. First-round draft pick after first-round draft pick after first-round draft pick from the wide receiver position, and now Jaylen Waddle's just the latest in that line. Got to give Alabama a lot of credit because in a game where they met their match yet again, Georgia has all the talent that anybody else in the SEC not named Alabama has. And Kirby, who is supposed to know Saban inside and out, and they've gone toe-to-toe with the Tide. Once again, it's the same old story. Georgia can hang around, but Georgia can't close. And if they're not going to do it yesterday when there was all the disruption over the course of the week because it seemed like Saban was not going to be able to coach inside the stadium and he was coaching via Zoom during the week. If Georgia's not going to do it, then I don't know when they're going to do it. It's another painful Sunday morning in Athens wondering what is it going to take for us to finish off Alabama one of these days. In the NFL, we've seen the hot seat get too hot in multiple stops around the league. We've seen Dan Quinn fired in Atlanta. We've seen Bill O'Brien fired in Houston. Could Matt Patricia in Detroit be the same deal tomorrow? Jason LaConfora of CBS Sports is reporting that if the Lions lose to the Jaguars today, Matt Patricia could be out of a job tomorrow Here's the former Patriots defensive assistant.
Every week, just trying to go out and compete and win and do everything we can to get better. And I think that's, we come in, we do our job. That's what we do. So I don't think, you get into anything other than that. You don't ride that wave, and you just try to go out and do the best you can that week. Obviously, we all know this business is tough. And those are two great guys. I reached out to both just to make sure that they were okay. I mean, certainly when any situation comes up, I always just think about, how's he doing? How's his family doing? That's probably the most important thing, just to make sure everybody's okay. We know what we sign up for other than that.
It's a nice sentiment from Matt Patricia talking about the two fired coaches already this season. But look, if the Lions can't turn the corner today and beat a Jaguars team that is by and large, by any metric, one of the worst teams in the NFL, you tell me why you would hang on to Matt Patricia. Besides the simple fact that you don't want to have to keep making changes, Matt Patricia's in year number three, and it is getting worse. You know, he inherited a team that went 9-7 back-to-back years under Jim Caldwell, and I know that that's nothing to write home about, and I realize that 9-7 is not exactly something that gets the fan base fired up. And I have certainly taken my swing to Jim Caldwell before as well. But here was Jim Caldwell's four seasons in Detroit. 11-5, 9-7, 9-7, 7-9. So the worst of Jim Caldwell's 4 years in Detroit was still better than the best of Matt Patricia's 3 years in Detroit. Because Patricia topped out at 6-10 in year one, went 3-12-1 last year, and is 1-3 going into today. If you are the Lions and you are Matt Patricia and you cannot figure out a way to beat the Jaguars today, Matt Patricia does deserve to be fired when we wake up on Monday morning, because the fact of the matter is Patricia came out of this Patriots organization, as so many other assistant coaches with the Pats do, and think that they just aced the final exam at an Ivy League college and that they've got all the answers. And when they get to their new stop, they are so filled with ego that they deny that anything that goes wrong could be their fault. Just look at Eric Mangini with the Jets and with the Browns. Look at Josh McDaniels with the Broncos. Look at Charlie Weiss when he was a million stops. Notre Dame, Kansas, the list goes on and on. Look at, more recently, a guy like Bill O'Brien. It just continues that assistant coaches from the Belichick tree think that because they won all these football games, they've got all the answers. But in fact, there's only one guy with all the answers, and that's the guy in the hoodie. And Patricia has fallen into this by blaming other people, by acting as though there was so much to fix when he took things over. He'd inherited a team that went 9-7 back-to-back years. It wasn't a ton to fix. You did need to get it better. That's what the Ford family wanted, but you've made it worse. I'm sick and tired of Matt Patricia acting like it's everybody's fault but his own. If he can't beat the Jaguars today, then yeah, they should make a change on Monday. And finally, in San Francisco, they went from going to a Super Bowl to being unable to beat anybody on their schedule that doesn't have New York in their name. The Niners' only two wins of the season are against the Giants and Jets, two winless teams in the NFL. And this was enlightening the other day when Steve Young, Hall of Fame 49ers quarterback, went on KNBR, our CBS sports affiliate in the Bay Area, and said right now there's a broken relationship between Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy Garoppolo.
Look, we've all been there. That's okay, but okay, now fix it. Like, we've got to now slow everything down so that you don't miss some of the stuff that's coming out, because then Kyle is going to call plays. He can't wonder if you're going to be too quick and not get to the guy that he knows is going to be open.
Right.
And so that needed, they get on the same page. And that's probably, I'm sure Kyle at the half, he was hurt. I get that. But he's also frustrated with Jimmy, right? It's like, look, I'm sure Kyle's like, guys are coming open. You're rushing through it. Slow it down. And I think that's what's got to happen quickly. And I remember I told you at the beginning of the year, the number one issue the team has, obviously, if health is number one, we should have said, because that's ended up being a big issue. But behind health is to get Kyle so that he had confidence that he could call and as aggressive a play calling as he wanted, both run and pass, and that Jimmy had a sense of confidence that he would protect the play caller. That's where you know things really hum. And that's obviously, you know, it's not in tatters right now, but it needs to get better.
That's Steve Young on KNBR in the Bay Area. And he says a lot of very, very fascinating things there about the relationship between Jimmy Garoppolo and Kyle Shanahan. The Kyle Shanahan wants to call an offense that's very variable, that has a lot of multiple looks. He wants to be creative and aggressive, which he has certainly been in the past. But he is being hamstrung because Garoppolo can't run that offense. And I'm looking at this team, and clearly injuries are a factor, including Garoppolo's. But when you look at their roster, when you look at their schedule, when you look at their team, they've lost to only the good teams on their schedule. The Cardinals, the Eagles, the Dolphins, and neither three of those are world beaters. And the Eagles can barely get out of their own way, and the Dolphins just dropped 43 last week on the road at Levi Stadium. Their only wins were against the Jets and the Giants, who are hapless. Right now, you have to wonder if this is a Super Bowl hangover, if last year was an anomaly, or if Jimmy Garoppolo is not really the right guy. And I thought that the Niners made the right decision in choosing Garoppolo over, let's say, Tom Brady in the offseason. I felt like you had a window to build and grow with Garoppolo that was many, many years long, and that the window was wide, and you didn't want to just sell that opportunity for 1 or 2 years best with an aging Tom Brady. But right now, undoubtedly, the Niners don't look like a playoff team. Some of that is injury, some of that is their offense, and some of that is a defense that was unable to even slow down Ryan Fitzpatrick of the Dolphins last week at home. It makes you wonder what happens tonight. I think the Rams are going to beat them and beat them good, because you're going to see Shanahan and Garoppolo as guys perhaps not on the same page. You're going to see a coach and a young quarterback, although Jared Goff's not that young anymore, but a coach and quarterback that are on the same page. There's a reason the Rams are 4-1 and ascending, and the reason why the Niners are 2-3 and scratching their heads. I think tonight is a mismatch, and I think the Rams end up winning this game easily over the Niners. Hit me up, 855-212-4CBS, and on Twitter, DA on CBS. Damon Amendolar with you here on Sunday Morning Football. There's always so many ways you can listen to the show across the great CBS Sports Radio Network on hundreds of affiliates nationwide and north of the border. Also on SiriusXM, Channel 206. You can also tell your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio, so have us on around the house all morning long. We do this until noon Eastern time, or if you're on the go, just stream us on your phone. Use the CBS Sports app, radio.com's app, or Apple Music. When we come back, excessive celebration, your best play-by-play calls of yesterday's college football action. That includes a thriller between Memphis and UCF, a bad loss for Auburn, and a bad ending as well. And how about FSU? Make it some history. It's next, DA, CBS Sports Radio.
The soundtrack of college football chaos. The announcers losing their minds.
We've got a bunch of folks down there.
He caught it.
It's excessive celebration.
It's going to be caught. It's a touchdown. And the Gators have won the game. I can't believe what I just saw. And this place is an insane asylum.
We start in the American, where this was a true shootout. Memphis and UCF, two of the dominant programs in the conference over the last couple of years, a rivalry where neither team likes one another all that much. Look at these quarterbacks and look at the total offense that they racked up yesterday. Dillon Gabriel for UCF threw for 601 yards and 5 touchdowns. Only to be outdone by Memphis's Brady White, who racked up 7 total touchdowns and threw for nearly 500 yards. In terms of total offense yesterday, UCF 798, Memphis 703. Waning seconds, Memphis leads by a point, 50-49. UCF lines up for a potential game-winning field goal.
Snap down, kick on the way.
And it is no good!
He missed it! He missed it! And the U of M is gonna break the losing streak.
Listen to the crowd, why don't you? Listen to this crowd.
13 games in a row, say goodbye.
Learfield IMG College on the call. Memphis was unable to get over the hump against UCF for 13 consecutive tries, and yet here they were, withstanding the late drive and the potential game-winning field goal. It got testy on the UCF sidelines, where the kicker, who was frustrated, seemed to get into a pushing match, a shoving match with one of his teammates. Emotions ran hot. Memphis survives, and the Tigers win 50-49. In the SEC, Auburn was ranked number 15 going into yesterday's game in Columbia, South Carolina, against the Gamecocks. South Carolina had not beaten Auburn since 1933. 1933, the last time South Carolina had beaten Auburn. And yet, here were the Carolina Gamecocks, who had a late lead, and it was an 8-point advantage on the final drive of the game. Bo Nix, who had thrown three INTs over the course of the afternoon for Auburn, had one chance to get into the end zone to get the 2-point conversion. It was 30-22, and it was fourth down. Auburn needed the first down, touchdown, and 2-point conversion. Here's the call.
Nix trips receiver to the right side, takes a shotgun snap. Got some time, now going to run up in the pocket. Now there's a flag on the play. Nix trying for it at the 9. They take him down. No time on the clock. That should be on Auburn, and the game should be over.
Personal foul. Hands to the face. Offense number 71.
Oh, yes.
The ball carrier is short of the line to gain. That penalty is declined.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Steve. That'll do it.
Thank you, sir. Todd Ellis, Learfield, IMG College. Bo Nix with a terrible day yesterday. Quarterback for Auburn, three interceptions and multiple boneheaded plays. On this play, it's fourth down. It's probably going to be your only play. There would have to be a really quick pass in first down for you to get one more play off. So it's probably going to be your final play. And Bo Nix drops back to pass, looks, can't find anybody in the end zone, and so he decides to start running around and then tuck it and run. There was no way he was going to be able to run for a first down and get another playoff or run all the way for a touchdown. It was a terrible decision by Nix. You have to throw it into the end zone and give your wide receiver a chance to make a play. A terrible day for Nix. A bad loss for Auburn. A big win for South Carolina. Congratulations to Will Muschamp and company. And I know starting from this moment forward, there's going to be calls at Auburn for somebody other than Gus Malzahn. And you know what's going to be a hot and popular name after this weekend? Hugh Freeze. I'll give you details on that next hour. But you know there's going to be Auburn fans clamoring for the former Ole Miss coach that was pushed out of town because of violations, but is right now doing a hell of a job at Liberty. And finally, North Carolina and Florida State. Look, FSU has taken it on the chin how many times this year? They have just seemed to be completely lost at sea. Mike Norvell, their first-year head coach, had come down with COVID. It was just a disastrous season. And here was number 5, North Carolina, who, coached by Mack Brown, was under a resurgence. They were playing well. They were ranked number 5 in the country at 3-0. So the undefeated number 5 UNC Tar Heels at Tallahassee. You'd have to figure an easy win by North Carolina, right? Not so fast. A 24-0 FSU lead. The Noles jumped out to a 24-0 lead before halftime. It was 31-7 at half. But 14 points put on the board in the third quarter made it a two-score game at 31-21. And then in the fourth quarter, another touchdown made it a field goal game. One score, 31-28. Could UNC extend a late drive to kick a game-time field goal or even get the win? On fourth down, the wide receiver was open, and then this happened.
They need to reach the Seminole 32. Here's the snap. Howell dropping to throw. We run a stunt. Can't get to him. Under pressure. He's going to try to run. Howell is still throwing the ball. Upfield is caught. Oh, incomplete. Incomplete at the 30-yard line. FSU will take over with 35 seconds left.
That's
Devontae Williams, who has killed the Noles all night with that wheel route, dropped it. It was in his mitts, and he could not hang on.
Trane Deckerhoff, voice of the Seminoles. How does it happen like that? That is Learfield, IMG College, Florida State Radio. UNC has a chance on fourth down to extend the drive. Receiver is wide open, and he just drops it. Just flat out drops it. He's past the first down marker as well. It would have been a first down, extend the drive. They could not hold on. And boy, FSU needed that one badly. They get the win 31-28 and a monumental victory for Mike Norvell and the Florida State Seminoles program. That is your excessive celebration coming up. Kurt Warner's going to join us, former Seahawks great. He was a tremendous running back for Seattle back in the 80s, a College Football Hall of Fame career at Penn State. Kurt Warner's going to join us to talk about the 5-0 Seattle Seahawks after the dramatic victory on Sunday night over the Minnesota Vikings last week. That's coming up here next on Sunday Morning Football. DA with you, Damon Amendolara.
You have a reservation for year-round excitement with CBS Sports. Your ticket to action.
It's Sunday Morning Football with DA.
Thanks so much for being with us. Another fine Sunday here on CBS Sports Radio. DA with you. And our next guest is a member of the College Football Hall of Fame. He was the third pick overall in the 1983 NFL Draft after a storied career at Penn State. He's a three-time Pro Bowler and a member of the Seattle Seahawks Ring of Honor. Joining us this morning here on the show is Kurt Warner. Kurt, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How about yourself? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for the time this morning. Really good to catch up with you and your former team, the Seahawks, 5-0 after surviving a crazy one last weekend against the Minnesota Vikings. Boy, Russell Wilson's playing at such an incredible level. How can you describe the level that he's playing at right now?
Well, you know what? I'm not surprised at all as to how he is playing, because he seems to get better year in and year out. And, you know, when he initially got out of here, the Seahawks were a dominant team at that particular time. However, it was more centered around the defense. But as, you know, as things have changed and progressed, it has been a Russell Wilson show more so over the last few years. So I'm not surprised as to how he's playing.
What is it about Russell Wilson's demeanor that allows him to seemingly get better even every year, even when we think there's not really another level for him to ascend to?
Well, I think he just has a burning desire to be a better quarterback. Coach Paterno used to tell us all the time. He would say, you never stay the same. You're either going to get better or you're going to get worse. And that applies to sports and life. And I think Russell Wilson just has a burning desire to get better, to improve upon the little things. I know for me, you know, when Coach Paterno would tell us, hey, let's get better today, you got to find things that you can work on. You have to do a self-evaluation on a daily basis. And that's what you try to do. You try to find something, not to be critical about it, but you got to say, okay, here's an area where I can improve. And then you go about making those improvements.
The Seahawks are on a bye week this week, but they're 5-0. One thing that might give people pause is their defense. Do you worry about their defense as the season moves along?
Yeah, they've got some challenges defensively right now. They're giving up a lot of points, a lot of yards. And, you know, they're going to have to tie up some loose ends. And I don't know where and how they're going to go about doing that. But they need to make some adjustments on that front.
If we go back to your career, you were one of the early picks of one of the best drafts in NFL history, multiple Hall of Famers, and multiple incredible running backs out of your draft class as well, including Eric Dickerson. In your rookie year, your Seahawks team goes on a run to the first postseason in franchise history, 1983, and it is capped off by, I think, a seminal moment, that divisional round win at the Orange Bowl in Miami, where you end up rushing for more than 100 yards, two touchdowns.
Yep.
You catch another 40 yards worth of passes, and it's a shocking upset as you guys go to a place with so much history, the Orange Bowl, and find a win over a young Dan Marino as well. Was that one of the highlights of your career, that moment?
I would think so, especially due to the fact that we were not expected to win anything. But we had a lot of talent. They brought in a guy by the name of Chuck Knox, Ground Chuck, and he was able to put together a combination of things that allowed us to take advantage of the talents that were already there. So I give a lot of credit to Coach Knox and that organization, and with regards to finding the right combinations and right keys for us.
You ended up in the playoffs, then that year the AFC Championship game, losing to the eventual Super Bowl champion Los Angeles Raiders, who end up in history going down as one of the great single-season teams ever, that 83 Raiders team. But you guys were in the postseason throughout the 80s.
We beat those guys twice that year and got beat down in L.A., just so you know.
So how did that feel to go into that, knowing that you had confidence that you could do it, but ultimately with a chance of the Super Bowl on the line, couldn't close?
Well, I tell you what, the Raiders had been to the Super Bowls, or to numerous Super Bowls in the past. They had, I think, an understanding of what was at stake more so than we did. And I think they turned the switch on, and they were a different team down in L.A., and they beat us up pretty good.
You end up leading the Seahawks in rushing throughout the 80s. You guys go to four postseasons in 6 years, and you play alongside one of the greatest players ever in Steve Largent. What was it like to be alongside Largent on offense and in the huddle and in practice day after day, year after year, as he's building one of the greatest resumes in NFL history?
Well, I tell you what, Steve Largent is a dear friend of mine, and he is just as much of a gentleman off the field as he is on the field. But he had a great work ethic. He probably ran the best routes I've ever seen. And I just enjoy watching him do his job and coming to work. And he brought his hard hat, and, you know, he was a fierce competitor.
A member of the Seahawks Ring of Honor, Kurt Warner, joining us here on the show. So you wrote a really fascinating book called The Warner Boys and your family's story of autism and hope. One out of every 59 children deal with autism in the United States as of a study just 5 years ago. So that number could even be increased by this point in time. But you kind of receded from the public eye in the 90s, and people didn't quite know why. And it was because of the effort that it took with two young boys who both had autism, twins of yours, Austin and Christian.
Yeah.
What was the most difficult part about that as you were going through it with your wife?
We're still in it. So, just because we wrote a book doesn't mean that it's concluded.
Sure.
They still have autism. We're still dealing with their behavior issues. Some days are better than others. We wrote the book to tell our story. There are a number of families out there that are dealing with autism or developmental disabilities. We would hope that it would encourage those families to keep at it, to work hard, to hang in there. You are not alone. And there are a number of families that we've talked to and parents that we've talked to can relate to what we're saying. So we just had an opportunity to be able to express it in such a way that hopefully it will help some families that are dealing with some very difficult issues.
And I'm sure it does. The book is called The Warner Boys. What is the most challenging part of raising children with severe autism?
It's just a daily thing that you have to do. You know, I think the sad thing about it is that, you know, when you're a parent and you have children, you expect to see certain things happen when they get to a certain age. And unfortunately, we are somewhat, and I don't mean this in a negative way, we're just somewhat stuck in a time warp at times where the same things are we're having to deal with the same things on a regular basis. And that gets tough when you have young adults that are still behind on a number of fronts. So that's what's sad about it, more so than anything else, that you don't get a chance to enjoy some of the things that you envision for your children. And that doesn't mean that we give up on them. No, not by any stretch of the imagination. It's just tough to deal with some of the activities at times.
I know that you said that you wrote the book to allow other families dealing with this to know that, you know, they're not alone. Did it also help you to connect with families through the book so that you felt like there were people that understood your situation?
Exactly. It's therapeutic as well. It's a tough story to tell because, you know, you have to put yourself out there. And sometimes as athletes or professional athletes or whatever, for guys in particular, it's tough to talk about things that are just emotional. And when you have family and you have young family members or children that you love dearly, you see them, you know, dealing with challenges, it's an emotional thing, and it's hard to talk about because, you know, you don't have the words really to kind of, you know, to put it out there.
The book is The Warner Boys. If there's any listeners out there that would be interested in a book about Kurt Warner's his life with his sons who deal with severe autism, The Warner Boys, Our Family Story of Autism and Hope, written by Kurt and his wife, Anna. That's available on Amazon right now, Amazon.com. Before I let you go, we were talking about your Seahawks days, but also you had referenced your days with Joe Paterno and Happy Valley, Penn State. How do you feel about James Franklin's job and where the Penn State program is these days?
Well, Penn State over the years has been playing some good football. They're in a very tough conference. We've got to get past Ohio State, Michigan, and Michigan State to win the Big Ten, and it's been a challenge. Unfortunately or fortunately, we've got some hurdles to clear, so we're hoping that this will be the year that happens.
Next weekend, Big Ten football restarts after the long hiatus. The book is The Warner Boys, Our Family Story of Autism and Hope, written by three-time Pro Bowler Kurt Warner, one of the standouts of the Seahawks all time, one of the members of their Ring of Honor, one of the best running backs of the 80s. Kurt, it's really nice to catch up. Thank you so much for doing it and sharing your story with us today.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Kurt Warner joining us this morning here on the show, former running back of the Seattle Seahawks. And those Seahawks teams of the 80s were such a revelation because they were so mediocre to below mediocre for so long in the 70s, and they had been an expansion team in 76. Not as bad, obviously, as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but never a team that could get over the hump and into the postseason. Had some decent teams in the late 70s with Zorn at quarterback and Steve Largent at wide receiver, but they couldn't quite get into the postseason. Fell on some hard times early 80s, and then had drafted Kurt Warner number 3 overall in a draft that, again, had John Elway and Dan Marino and Eric Dickerson, and the list goes on and on and on. Jim Kelly, the amazing 83 draft. And they bring in Chuck Knox, and Knox immediately turns them into winners at 9-7, and then they get into the playoffs, and they win a couple of playoff games, including on the road to the Orange Bowl against Miami, a team that was led by Dan Marino at the time. They end up coming up short of the AFC Championship game against the Los Angeles Raiders. But it would kind of start a trend of the 80s, the Seahawks being a very, very good team. The following year, they went 12-4. They were kind of a sexy pick to make the Super Bowl. This is a young team on the rise. Unfortunately, in 84, they couldn't capitalize on a great regular season, but they were in the playoffs almost every year throughout the 80s. They went 10-6 in 86. They went 9-6 in 87. They went 9-7 in 88. So they were in the postseason regularly and a pretty good, solid organization under Knox and then Dave Craig at quarterback and Kurt Warner at running back. John L. Williams was very, very good. Brian Blades and a number of very, very good players throughout that tenure. So good to catch up with Kurt Warner this morning here on the show. When we come back here on the program, it's Sunday Morning Football. Let's talk about today's big one, the Buccaneers and the Packers. This is the one in the late window today. So if you are preparing for clearing the deck and getting ready to watch Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady, the football networks, the TV networks are going to help out your cause. There's only one game going against Rodgers versus Brady, and that is Dolphins and Jets. And my guess is most, if not all of you, would like to run far away from a Jets game instead of watching it these days. So that's going to be the only challenger in the late window. The entire nation basically going to get Rodgers versus Brady, the Buccaneers versus the Packers. Let's talk about that coming up here next on the show. Also coming up in hour number two, our Vegas virtuoso, Larry Hartstein, is going to join us. We'll talk about the Vegas lines today. In terms of that Bucs and Packers game, the Pack a slight favorite. We'll discuss more in depth coming up here next. DA, Sunday Morning Football, CBS Sports Radio.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.